Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Three Buffalo teenagers face charges after the vehicle they are accused of stealing was tracked by the New York State Police Aviation Unit. The pursuit began around 9:30 Wednesday night when Buffalo police officers were flagged down on Fillmore Avenue by the victim whose vehicle had been stolen. Once notified, state police went to the air to follow the vehicle, which at one point drove in the wrong direction on the Kensington Expressway before it was stopped on Lafayette Avenue. Facing extensive charges are 19-year-old Jaquan Tillman, 19-year-old Theodore Robinson, and an unidentified 17-year-old male. Commercial and recreational vessels should expect timing complications while using the Black Rock Lock through mid-December. Officials with the Buffalo District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says the interruptions are due to a geotechnical investigation, which includes 12 hours of drilling by barge each day. Vessels are now required to contact the Black Rock Lockmaster 48 hours in advance so travel can be properly coordinated. Officials say the work is needed to assess operational efficiency at the lock, which is utilized each year by thousands of commercial and recreational vessels. And tonight we'll kick off a week of scheduled events in the Elmwood Village as the Elmwood Village Association marks its 30th anniversary. A champagne toast will be held at 5 p.m. inside Lafayette Avenue Presbyterian Church. Events scheduled through November 8th include Clean Up Elmwood, Read Elmwood, and Bike Elmwood. A 15-year-old East Community High School student remains hospitalized after he was beaten Tuesday at Martin Luther King Park by several suspects. The Erie County District Attorney's Office has charged a 16-year-old male in connection with the attack. The suspect, who was remanded to the custody of the Erie County Youth Services Center, was arraigned yesterday on one count of gang assault in the first degree, which is classified as a Class B violent felony. The victim's family told WIVB that he remains in Oshai Children's Hospital dealing with seizures, lost consciousness, and a broken clavicle. Millions in state funding will be used on projects at four Buffalo parks that officials say are part of the long-term plan to reduce the impact of the city's combined sewer overflows into area waterways. The Buffalo Sewer Authority reports an $8.75 million green resiliency grant will fund infrastructure upgrades at Martin Luther King Jr., Eddie Dawson, Hennepin, and Lincoln Parks. Porous pavement, rain gardens, stormwater tree trenches, and underground stormwater storage systems will be installed. In a release, Buffalo Sewer Authority CEO and General Manager O.J. McFoy said the projects will, quote, reduce urban flooding in neighborhoods while improving access to parklands. And the Haudenosaunee flag will be raised at Buffalo City Hall today, the first day of Native American Heritage Month. The noontime flag raising will feature a series of speakers from indigenous leaders from Western New York and a cultural performance of music and dance. All seats in the New York State Senate are up for election this year, and in one local race, an incumbent state legislative veteran is being pitted against a challenger who's held office before, but in another state. WBFO's Jim Fink has more.
Some local political pundits are calling the race for the 61st District State Senate seat a David versus Goliath scenario where incumbent and longtime Democratic Party stalwart Sean Ryan is running against Republican Party nominee Christine Czarnecki. Ryan has multiple advantages, including a strong brand name, a district that is heavy in registered Democratic Party enrollees, and a deep-pocketed campaign treasury.
100%. You know, in the same with Amherst. Like, we have an idea of what, you know, Amherst is, but it's often dated. You know, Amherst has a higher foreign-born population than the city of Buffalo does. And I think that comes as a surprise to a lot of people, but it's a super energetic community, you know, a lot of new ideas.
Czarnecki, who moved to the town of Tonawanda 4 years ago from the South Carolina suburb of Somerville, is a seasoned political veteran herself. She served on the town council in Somerville for 4 years.
I had a second home here for a long time.
Were you from here? Were you a native here?
Yeah. I've always loved it here. And, you know, anytime I took a vacation, it was always coming back to Buffalo.
The district covers portions of Buffalo, along with the town of Tonawanda, the city of Tonawanda, Grand Island, Amherst, and the villages of Kenmore and Williamsville.
I knew moving back that I would get involved in Republican politics in some way. I was active with the Republican Party when I lived in South Carolina.
You know, before I represented Hamburg in Lackawanna, but the North Town suburbs, you know, especially with Amherst and the university, you know, it's a whole different kettle of fish. And, you know, Tonawanda is a town that really prioritizes its providing services to their community, whether it's senior services, swim lessons for kids, golf, baseball, you know, they do it all. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you go to Grand Island and, you know, it's an island and they're trying to build an economy focused on recreation. And they're trying to build a community that really looks at, you know, what can we do with our big asset.
According to the Erie County Board of Elections data, Ryan has raised approximately $380,000 for this race, while Sarnak has raised $126,000, much of it coming from the New York State election draw funding process. And within the district, there are 93,289 people as registered Democrats, compared with 50,054 enrolled Republicans. And there is another 47,674 registered independent voters. Going into the final days of the election, this much is sure about both Ryan and Sarnak. They are passionate about their desire to make upstate work, particularly the Buffalo Niagara region, and they want it to be stronger and more viable.
Speaking with people across the political spectrum, for the most part, everybody cares about the same things. That things in reality, when you just talk to your neighbors, are not as polarized as you would think they are.
You know, I'm a lawyer, and I mostly have worked with poor people. And you see the problems that people face. And I did a lot of one-on-one representation where I helped people. But then you realized we need systemic changes. We need to do things differently if we want different outcomes. You know, and government is the answer to that.
But for that to happen, Sarnak and Ryan see their role in the region's both short-term and long-term fate from decidedly different lenses. Early voting continues through 5 p.m. Sunday, November 3rd. The actual election day voting begins at 6 a.m. on November 5th and runs to 9 p.m. Jim Fink, WBFO News.
History was made during the World Series as the Dodgers won it in Game 5. The Buffalo Sabres prepare for a back-to-back starting tonight, and the Bills host Miami on Sunday. I'm Jack Cruiser. This is The Scoreboard for Friday, November 1st. Game 5 of the World Series was a microcosm of the 2024 New York Yankees season. For a team loaded with superstar talent, they consistently made mistakes that you see a U14 team make. Despite a terrific start, all of the momentum on their side, errors cost the Yankees the game on Wednesday, and with it, the World Series. During the regular season, New York committed 93 errors in the field. That's seventh most in Major League Baseball. In Game 5 of the World Series, the Yankees came out of the gates firing with two home runs in the first inning and an elite start from their ace pitcher Garrett Cole. They built a 5-0 lead through four innings and had all of the Bronx in a frenzy, all assuming the series was headed back to Los Angeles for Game 6. Instead, though, the Dodgers, as elite teams do, took full advantage of three Yankee fielding errors in the fifth inning, producing five unearned runs to tie the game. From that moment on, it just never felt like the home team would win, even when they took a one-run lead in the sixth inning. Two runs off two sacrifice flies in the top of the eighth gave LA the 7-6 lead, which they would hold on to, claiming the franchise's eighth World Series championship. Now, for our friends up north, history was made as Freddie Freeman became the first Canadian national team player to be named MVP of the World Series. The 35-year-old broke records, hitting a home run in each of the first four games of the Fall Classic, including a walk-off grand slam in extras of Game 1. He also notched a record 12 RBI in the series, tying Bobby Richardson's mark set in 1960. Born in California to Canadian-born parents, Freeman holds dual citizenship and chose to represent his late mother Rosemary's native Canada during the World Baseball Classic in both 2017 and 2023. When he was hired by the Sabres this summer, Coach Lindy Ruff mentioned that the team's results on back-to-backs would have to improve if they wanted to make the playoffs. They'll have the chance to get 4 points in two nights this weekend as 4-5-1 Buffalo hosts the New York Islanders tonight before they head to Detroit for a Saturday night meeting with the Red Wings. As Coach Ruff referenced this summer, the Sabres went 10-13-1 in games played on consecutive days last year. So far this season, under their new coach, Buffalo has gone 0-4 in their two sets of back-to-back games. Tonight, the Sabres host a stingy New York Islanders team that ranks top 10 in the National Hockey League in goals against average and save percentage. New lines will be in rotation tonight for Coach Ruff as he tries to get both Dylan Cousins and Jack Quinn a spark offensively. That duo has been snake-bitten with just one goal between the two of them 10 games into the season. Drop tonight is at 7 p.m. Tomorrow night, the Sabres will be in the Motor City for their second meeting with the Red Wings this season. Buffalo defeated Detroit last Saturday 5-3 at KeyBank Center. The Sabres can expect their opponent to come out flying tomorrow, in contrast to how the Red Wings started the game a week ago. Puck drop tomorrow is set for 7 o'clock as well. The Buffalo Bills have won the AFC East Division title each of the last four seasons. It's only 9 weeks in, but the Bills have the chance to take a stranglehold on the division with a win this Sunday as they host the Miami Dolphins. In their first meeting this season, Buffalo dominated the Dolphins in Miami 31-10 back in Week 2. During that game, Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa went down with a concussion, keeping him out of action for a few weeks. Tua returned to play last week in the Finns' one-point loss to the Cardinals, but the Miami quarterback looked like himself again, throwing for 230 yards and a touchdown in the loss. Kickoff in the rematch this Sunday is set for 1 o'clock at Highmark Stadium. The high school football playoffs in Section 6 begin this weekend with a majority of quarterfinal games taking place tonight. Friday Night Lights will be live from Williamsville South High School for a quarterfinal matchup in Class B between the Will South Billies and the South Park Sparks. Kickoff from Will South tonight is at 7 p.m. You can catch all of the action on WBFO and WNED Create. This has been the scoreboard for Friday, November 1st. I'm Jack Cruiser for WBFO Sport.
For Theater Talk on WBFO, I'm Anthony Chase.
And I'm Peter Hall.
And I did get out to Cheektowaga to Desiderio's Dinner Theater to see The Shawshank Redemption on stage. Quite well done, I agree. And they packed him in. They had to open up the larger space and all the tables filled as people were waiting for this story of intrigue and suspense as the main character, convicted of having murdered his wife and his wife's lover, but he is innocent, but no one will believe him and the prison is corrupt and how will he get out of it? And he keeps distracted by day with a poster of Rita Hayworth and a pickaxe. No, not a pickaxe, but a rock hammer. Yeah, that should have been a giveaway, people. I understand in the movie that but it takes so long for him to get out of prison that by the time he's done, it's no longer Rita Hayworth, but Raquel Welch.
Yes, it is. Well, I thought the supporting cast was fine, but I really liked the lead, the character Andy Dufresne, played by Brian Tabak, who did look a lot like Tim Robbins for the movie. And Kinsey Brown played his pal Red, the guy who can get anything you want in prison, including a rock hammer.
Including a rock hammer. The night I was there, there was someone in the audience who resembled Tim Robbins so much it was a distraction for people. But it turned out it was not he.
Well, actually, everyone knows the movie title, The Shawshank Redemption, but the original Stephen King novella was Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption. So I just thought it was great that Jay Desiderio not only had the poster of Rita Hayworth on the set, but also in the lobby.
In the lobby, in several places. Well, Rita Hayworth had been sort of the muse of a generation. She died in 1987, not yet 70 years old, Alzheimer's disease, from which she had suffered for several years. But throughout World War II, that poster that's used in the show, iconic. But her name is in the title of this novella. But also Manuel Puig had used her in his novel Betrayed by Rita Hayworth. He is also the author of Kiss of the Spider Woman. Movie muses are kind of his thing. Oddly, she seems to be all but forgotten today.
I know the impresario of Desiderio's Dinner Theater, Jay Desiderio, kept telling everyone who came in, oh, look, that's Rita Hayworth, as if no one would remember. But I remembered.
Well, Gilda from 1946, an incredible movie, and then Blood and Sand was the big one. And he uses a bit of sound of her doing Pal Joey, even though it's pretty clear from the script that the actual reference is to Gilda, Put the Blame on Mame, in the end of that number. I'm not very good with zippers, but maybe if I had some help. And then, of course, when her then-husband Orson Welles bleached her hair blonde, cut it off, and left her on the floor to die in The Lady from Shanghai in 1947. You know, quite the star. But I can remember the 1970s when Black Glamma featured her in one of those mink ads where they would say what becomes a legend most, and then they would show the image of the woman in the mink and not say who it was. When they featured Rita Hayworth, it was the first time people called and said, who is that? Who is that? What, 30 years after Gilda?
Thank God for Stephen King.
The remarkable Rita Hayworth, and she could do everything, and she was astonishingly beautiful. But Shawshank Redemption over at, say that three times fast, over at Desiderio's Dinner Theater, where I did have the Pork Shank Redemption for dinner. It is dinner theater.
It is indeed.
Delicious.
Well, as we mentioned a couple of shows ago, there have been a series of somewhat prison-related shows, and you did get over to the break song. Nobody goes to prison, but it's hanging in the air.
American Repertory Theater, a play by Mark Humphrey, surprisingly polished for a first production, I thought, and really, really compelling. Again, good acting. I thought Vincenzo McNeil, very, very strong. And the playwright's own son, who it turns out every acting teacher in town or everyone from Amherst High School knew who he was. He was Gaston in his high school Beauty and the Beast. Robert Humphrey playing the younger jazz musician.
And I know I mentioned it before, but the roles turn out to be more of a father and son role. And I found it, as a father with a son, incredibly touching. So it was kind of cool to see the playwright's son on the stage.
Yeah, I thought so, too. Parents and Children, part of the theme of the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, which opens tonight at Second Generation Theater. Kind of an adorable and quirky musical.
And it was delayed a week for COVID, but I did get to Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore. It was put on at the Amherst Community Church, which I rather liked. I thought the set was pretty clever for using a church rec room. And I liked the acoustics, too. A very bright room. I found it the most satisfying Gilbert and Sullivan produced by Opera Lights in several seasons.
Marvelous. Well, maybe we'll see more produced in that room. Do you think Starlight Express could fit in that room? No one's done it. For Theater Talk on WBFO,
I'm Peter Hall.
And I'm Anthony Chase.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.